Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
It's actually getting harder and harder to land a good job, keep a full-time benefited stable job with an organization that you feel good about. So many people are considering starting their own business, whether they've already been in a business and made it their kind of part-time effort, but they're needing to make it full-time, whether they're artists or musicians or craftspeople or therapists or writers, or even people who are working in organizations and they've done something good that they're trying to promulgate. For example, my wife is pretty proud of what they've done and how they've integrated iPads into the preschool curriculum without giving kids too much screen time. She likes to promulgate it. So, of course, the quality of your product and your service are most important, but PR is also important. The days, however, of doing PR just by sending a press release to TV or radio stations and to the San Francisco Chronicle are over. But what works today? With me to address that is a guy who started marketing and PR traditionally, but has in recent years moved to a more up-to-date and effective set of strategies. And he's written an article on a topic that opened my eyes to quite a bit that's new in PR, which I didn't fully understand, and I still don't, but I think he'll help us both to understand it and how it might help you, whether you are self-employed, aspiring self-employed, or in an organization where you'd like to promote something. So, Peter Himmler, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Hi, Marty. I'm glad to be here with you today.
Terrific. So, you know, I can't help it. This has nothing to do with anything, but I can't imagine going through life with a name like Himmler. Have you gotten an endless, you know, Nazi jokes?
Well, I'll tell you, the first time I called the entertainment editor at the Associated Press and left her a message, she called me back and she said, I got a message that Peter Himmler called, and you better call him back.
Or else, we have ways of dealing with you. Right. Okay, I'll be good. Today, you're writing that today the priority should less be on getting coverage in traditional media like the San Francisco Chronicle or talk radio, and the effort should be more on getting users of your product or your service or this program you're trying to promote in your workplace. You're trying to get people to share their, people meaning the users of that, potential users, to share their Instagram images, their Vine or YouTube clips, their tweets, their Snapchats. Why has that taken primacy?
Well, so our industry has blown up in the last several years. I mean, it used to be 10 years ago, you get a journalist, you convince the journalist to do a story on your company or on your product or on your service, and that story could drive a conversation. And as the media has...
Drive a conversation, meaning drive the readers would read it, they would tell their friends.
Drive awareness, drive action, drive purchases, drive sales, you know. And it used to be the New York Times, they had a front page story, they would set the national news agenda. And in the since the media has fragmented and people are getting their news and information through their social networks, through different small blogs, through on mobile, through a myriad different ways, no longer can these influential traditional legacy media drive the kinds of action that they used to. So we in public relations now have to look at other means to build awareness for our clients and, to have ambassadors do that for you, to have influencers do that for you, to create content and have that, or, you know, write an article or create a video and have that syndicate. And these are all different things that we are weighing now. And it's, you know, no longer can we rely on the benevolence of a journalist to drive our messaging.
I'm actually, there's so much you said that actually surprises me. It seems like in the world of 10 zillion blogs and tweets and everything else, that the curation function of the, I mean, everything I ever hear today is still the New York Times, the New York Times, New York Times, New York Times. Is it really not true that an article in the New York Times is still the big kahuna?
Don't want to disparage the New York Times. It's still one of the most influential traditional news organizations. And in fact, the people at the New York Times are very sophisticated in getting their content, in distributing their content in different channels. And then you have all the writers for the New York Times that have their own social media followings, large followings. So the Times has been savvy. There's a guy named Michael Zimbel is there, who's the head of R&D. They've been very savvy in getting their content out, you know, and building a digital footprint across, you know, social and the web. And so that's been so maybe the New York Times is not a great example. I mean, maybe local newspapers in other cities, though, yep, that have not done that, what the New York Times is doing or what the Washington Post is doing or even the Wall Street Journal, right, you know, they're having more challenges.
Exactly. On the other hand, I would think that it is, you know, there are, I think if I last I heard, there are 15 billion or is it million blogs out there. There are so many blogs. Everybody's tweeting.
Yep.
How in the world is it possible for a PR person to, you know, isn't it just you add a few more, you focus on Gawker and you focus on BuzzFeed and that's it?
Yeah. So there are outlets. Like there's an outlet called Now This News, okay, Now This. And it's a video app that you have, or it's a video news site. And when you think about CNBC, for example, CNBC on its best day will have 500,000 viewers, right? Now This News does these very short video clips, and you get them on your mobile, you get them in your social channels. They have 700 million views a month.
Jesus.
So yes.
And I looked at it. I looked at Now This News just recently. It embarrasses me how shallow and pop culture centric and silly it all is.
Yeah. It's also younger. So depending upon, you know, you said that your audience, you know, they're small business and they're artists, etc. I mean, not all of these outlets are appropriate. You have to look at where your prospective customers reside. Are they on Snapchat? Are you looking to reach millennials? Then they're on Snapchat, or they're listening to Now This News. If you're looking in a business to business, you know, they're on LinkedIn. If you're looking to reach moms, maybe they're on Facebook, or they're reading mommy bloggers. You know, so you have to look at who your audience is and determine the channel and who you engage that way.
So let's be specific. So let's say, you know, I think about my listeners, and so many of them are in that space. They're musicians, they're artists, they're therapists, they're craftspeople, they're writers. All things being equal, and they don't have big budgets, they're not going to spend any money.
Right.
You talked about ambassadors, you're talking about influencers. You know, if somebody paid you a consulting fee to tell them where that kind of category of people needs to direct their efforts, and more importantly, how to get, I mean, it's all well and good to say create a tweet or create a video, YouTube video, but, you know, they get about 7 hits. You know, it's not worth the effort unless you get 700,000 hits. What advice do you have to people?
Well, I wrote a piece a year ago, similar to the one I just wrote, which was called Content Marketing is so Last Year.
Right.
And the one I wrote a year ago was to the PR industry saying, you know, face up. The fact is that you no longer can rely on these journalists. You have to pay now, okay? You have to think about who you can hire. You have to create content, and it's costly. So what's unfortunate is that, you know, if you convince a journalist to do a story and the story, you know, is seen by a lot of people, then you can move the needle. But today, you know, you have to consider sponsored content.
So that's
you
pay.
To
you
consider talk paying influencers. You know, there is there are these companies that have cropped up.
I know.
That have these influencers, people that have a lot of followers on Vine, a lot of followers on Instagram, a lot of followers on Snapchat, and the big brands, not the small artists, but the big brands are actually negotiating, they're arbitraging, they're hiring these influencers and their built-in audiences. So the example I gave in the story was when Jay-Z launched his streaming media company Tidal Streaming, and he did this big news conference and spent a lot of money with all these stars and all this production value, and all he had to do was, you know, ask his wife to put out a single Instagram photo, and she's got, you know, millions of followers, and so. That's one of the points I made in the story that you referenced earlier.
You may have noted I sighed at a moment when you talked about paying celebrities or whatever. That has extended. I want to be very careful to not be political on the show, but there is a leading candidate who is doing that wildly, paying, I can't say, I don't know exactly, but getting a whole army of celebrities to tweet and to do all these things. And what in the world does a celebrity rock star have anything to do with his or her qualifications to be president? It is like we are hurtling this nation into shallowness. Am I wrong?
It's unfortunate. It's true, but it's smart too. It's smart.
Let's get back.
You've got to do it. You've got to do it.
Okay. Let's say I'm your brother. I want to get back to the practicality of my listenership. Let's say I am a fine carpenter or a jewelry maker, and you're my brother. We're having beers together. And I say, I'm scared to death that I'm making 23 grand a year from my woodworking and no benefits and no nothing. And nobody, I'm 45 years old. I'm kind of this artsy type. I'm a political activist as a hobby. I want so much to, I need to be able to make, you know, the rents in San Francisco are F crazy. What the hell, bro, do I do?
I mean, you know, you opened up the conversation with the fact that publicity is not as effective as it used to be, and I corroborated. On the other hand, you could find influencers in any industry. So you could find scores of people that are blogging, writing, tweeting, vining about woodworking. And you could engage them. And you could interest them. But I think, let's step back, okay? So that woodworker, if they want to hire a public relations firm, they need to know, well, why is what I'm doing different? How is it special? Is it newsworthy? Does it even rise to the level that a blogger would even want to write about it, you know?
Well, most people are not. So let's
say, the first question.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
The first question.
So most, I want to deal with the outlier, the person who is doing jewelry-bedecked furniture for Michael Jackson types. No, let's say, like the typical person. I'm trying to speak to the typical person. I am a good worker. I make lovely chairs. I make fine cabinets. I might even make beautiful hand-rolled oak bar surfaces, right? But I'm not something unique. I'm just good. Do I forget about PR? Do I commit suicide? What do I do?
You probably can forget about earned, what we call earned media.
Tell us what earned media means.
You convince a journalist that what you're doing is newsworthy and they should write about you.
Okay, right.
But, you know, with the explosion of the number of outlets out there, my feeling is that there's always some outlet that would take an interest. If you create some wonderful images, if you create a narrative around how you created your product, you know, you can engage a journalist, or you can create content yourself. Write a story with images, and there are places that you could post. There's a site called Medium,
right,
which Evan Williams, the founder of Twitter, founded, and it's a platform that you can write to. Anyone can contribute there, and there's a woman, Jill Fehrenbacher, who has a site called Inhabitat, which I love, and it's all about green, you know, creative stuff, you know, and I would go there. So if you do a little research, you'll find people that are writing about what you're doing.
So let me try to make that concrete. So let's say I am this woodworker, and believe me, I can't saw a piece of wood straight. So, but let's say I was a woodworker. In light of what you just said, here is what I would do. I would write a one-page article, or if I couldn't write, I'd find somebody to write on how the hell I became a woodworker. what maybe my dad, maybe there was a poignant story about something my dad did, and then he, God forbid, suddenly died of a heart attack, and, you know, when I think back, and then, you know, and then my first bad productions, my first box that I created and the, it didn't line up, and I have a photo, I take a picture of that, and then I said I found this great mentor, this woman who was this African-American who showed me the wonders of African-American woodworking, and then, you know, all through that, and then my first success, and my failures, and my questions and my doubts, and my most recent work. Like, and then I would promulgate that in a little 1 minute YouTube video, a 1 minute article. I might tweet about it, and I would send links to that to every damn. I would Google the word woodworking and look for the blogs and Twitter feeds and Pinterest and all the rest of them, and send them links. That's what I would do. What's right and wrong about that?
I think so you're right about creating content. And if you are in the visual arts, like woodworking, you probably don't want it to be heavily text-driven. You want it to be visual. So there are sites like Pinterest. There's a site called Houzz, H-O-U-Z-Z, that they are driven by images. And if you, for example, create a piece of content, if you post it on Medium or if you post it on your blog, and then you go on Pinterest and you pin it in a collection, or if you go on Houzz and you link it in Houzz, you know, people discover it. You want to put it out there so it's discoverable. And you know, and pretty soon, you know, people will be able to transact with that piece all across the web, because in addition to distributed commerce for journalism, there's distributed content for journalists, for news sites, there's distributed commerce where people, there are buy buttons all across the web and the social web.
I do have to issue a little cautionary note.
Yeah, I'm sorry, getting a little vernacular there.
No, it's not any mean, no. I mean, a cautionary note as follows. I have a significant background in educational reform, and when you told me about Medium, I reprinted an article I had written on reinventing education and reinventing higher education, and I posted it on Medium. And these were my very best works. That's part of why I did it. And I've written 3,000 published articles, including for Time, The Atlantic, or whatever. I posted these two articles, which I considered my very best, on Medium. Do you know how many total views I've received?
I don't know.
Four.
Not that many.
Four.
Yeah.
Four. And it's been up there for 3 months. 2 months. Yeah. Four. So I want to caution people against putting a lot of effort into these media creations.
I'm not saying Medium is the place that every piece of content created, the content that you create should reside. I mean, it's actually very tech driven. There's a lot of some more politics that are going in there. But I think the point is the Medium is not the destination. So what you do is, once you have it posted, once it's accessible, once there's a URL, you know, once there's an address, a web address, or whatever, then you could look at other places where you can link to it.
Good point.
And you can drive eyeballs to it. And that's the goal.
Right. So it would be, if I was interested in education reform and that's the only place I could post it was on Medium, I could send the link then to every educational reform senator and congressman and
Or
and
you could tweet at people that, listen, you know, at Twitter, there are a lot of people writing about educational reform, and there are a lot of influencers in that space, and so you might want to tweet to some of those folks and say, did you see this article? You know, so there are ways to, but the place, it has to reside digitally somewhere, you know.
Right.
It can't be in your head, so it's got to be out there in the public domain, in the digital domain, you know.
Fair point. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. I'm talking with Peter Himmler. He is the principal in the firm of Flatiron Communications. We're talking about the realities about what's new in PR for regular folk. We're not talking about Jay-Z. We're talking about regular small business owners and the like.
Yep.
Now, you know, we're constantly hearing mobile, 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 mobile. Everything is mobile. Is there any specific advice you have for how a small business, or, for example, my wife, who's very proud of using using iPads very cleverly with preschool kids, and they're loving it and growing a lot. Is there any advice you have about how a small business might use a mobile app like WhatsApp or Facebook Instant Message or Apple Message?
Well, okay, a couple things. The biggest issue with small businesses and mobile is that their website is not designed for mobile. So the first thing they need to do is convert their website into HTML5 or have someone do it. There are companies that do this for you.
Right.
And to make sure that your website, your small business website, looks good on an Android phone, on an iOS phone.
Right.
Okay.
And by the way, you don't need to hire a company.
On an iPad.
You don't need to hire, you know, there are individuals. This is a pretty routine task. Anybody who's been is a web developer, one of these self-employed website developers, they can convert that in a couple of hours. It's not a major project.
Right, right. And there are companies that that do that as well. So, so that's one thing. The second thing is, listen, I mean, WhatsApp is great. I mean, it's huge. It's, you know, 700 million users.
No, I can't believe it.
But the bottom line is WhatsApp is mostly overseas. The penetration in the U.S. is not as high as it is around the world. So it may not be the right messaging platform to deliver your, you know, company's message.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you have to choose the channel based on who you anticipate or based on who your audience is. And each of these channels have very distinct audiences.
How obviously. About Facebook Instant Message and Apple Message? Do they have a distinctive audience?
Yeah, Facebook. Yeah, well, I don't know what the demographics of Facebook Instant Message are, except that I know Facebook has a billion plus people using it. You know, I just saw a stat today that there are more people on Facebook than there were on the Earth 200 years ago.
Wow, you know? Jeez.
So. I think of Facebook, I think of a lot of families. I think of a lot of mothers, and you know. And so I don't. When I think of Snapchat, I think of millennials. I think of LinkedIn. I think obviously of business people, of people, you know, professionals. So they're all different. I think of Twitter. I think a lot of journalists. You know. So for me, being on Twitter, and I am very active on Twitter, and I have been since 2007. Is important in the public relations business, because if you were to think about one profession that is the most active on Twitter, it's probably journalists, you know?
Yeah. Are there any that have become has-been? Are the Vine and Snapchats beginning to fade away?
Well, okay, so as you know, Twitter launched a live video streaming site called Periscope, and it immediately put out of business Meerkat, which just last week announced that it was pivoting away from live video streaming because it couldn't compete with Facebook's new video streaming service and Periscope, which is owned by Twitter. So you're right. You've got to be nimble. You've got to continue to innovate. And, I know that Facebook has huge aspirations for its live video streaming. I like Periscope a lot, actually.
Why?
Part of Twitter. It's funny, you know, after the snowstorm in New York, we walked over to Central Park and I fired up the Periscope on a hill of kids sledding in Central Park and in like 2 feet of snow, and I had 100 followers following the video stream from Sweden and from Texas and from whatever. That was just a really great dynamic,
fun.
Really fun.
You know, let me invite the listeners to ask you a question that may be of value. So, dear listeners, if you are either currently in need of greater business, if you will, and are wondering about how you could use PR and don't know how to use PR in your particular situation, I invite you to give a call and ask our expert here, Peter Himmler, principal of a well-regarded PR firm called Flatiron Communications. The phone number here, Work With Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Now, there are many people today, you know, will create. You know, we are in an ever more visual medium. You know, we went from long text to short text to tweets to you know, infographics, and of course video, short little 30-second videos of everything from you know, cat cuteness to you know, political activism. Everybody's holy grail is to go viral. Have we learned anything about what the principles are? What are the key principles in maximizing the chances of your little video going viral?
So in the early days of what we call consumer-generated content, and today we call it user-generated content.
Define that clearly for us, please.
It's basically, it's content that individuals create, that a blogger creates or whatever, as opposed to a media company. So
like the woodworker,
a media company now.
The woodworker creating his little one, you know, his series, his slideshow of his stuff.
It could be a blog post. It could be a short video. It could be anything.
Okay.
You know? And in those days, you know, a lot of firms, a lot of small agencies says, oh, yes, we have the key to making this video viral. And it was kind of like no one believed that, you know. But then you look at the success of BuzzFeed, and you know, they do a lot of testing of headlines, they do a lot of testing of content, and they do, you know, a news site like BuzzFeed and even Now This News, they do what we call A-B testing, where they'll figure out, is this thing going to work or not? If it doesn't, we can just swap out the headline, you know. And so they have, you know, a method to their madness on what stories to cover, what headlines to use. And you know, there's a lot to be gleaned from
their You got something
success.
Specific? So tell me something. Tell our listeners, don't, you know, we can tell people to go to BuzzFeed and Gawker and Now This, and they're going to see all these, you know, these very glitzy pop culture stuff, but they're not going to be able to glean what's going to be useful for them. Can you tell us what is a useful tool to increase chances of something going viral?
Well, it's a great question. It's the million-dollar question, Marty. If I had that answer, I'd be a very rich man, you know. But I will tell you that when I write, and my editor at Forbes would say, well, gee, you've got to change the headline because you don't really say what the story is about in the headline. So they're very focused on what the headline should be, what the lead should be, what visuals you use. So all of those, you know, come together and can make a piece of content viral, you know. Obviously, the narrative is really important. So what is the essence of the story? The length of the story, there's something called TLDR, too long, didn't read, you know. And so you don't, you know, those kinds of stories. So, you know, tend to have a harder time, you know, getting going viral. But there are also longer form short pieces that happen to catch the attention.
All right.
You know?
I want to take a shot. I don't want to, yeah, I love the fact that radio can be a very spontaneous medium. Mm-hmm. I want you to tell me, I'm going to try to use whatever intuitions I have to create an outline here right on the air for something that could go viral, and I want you to try to critique it. And I swear, dear listeners, this is something we totally didn't prepare. Pick a something you would like me to try to create a YouTube video for that would go viral, that would be relevant to my KELW NPR-ish San Francisco-ish audience.
So maybe the tension between the well-heeled technology workers in San Francisco and those that have no place to live.
Okay, great. You made it very easy for me. Couldn't be easier.
The homeless.
Yeah, it couldn't be easier. So I would have a series of flash half-second each still pictures of the juxtapositions. I would have a picture of some Silicon Valley person living in a mansion, and then a half second later, somebody who is literally scrounging the ground for food. And I would have 20 or 30 of those, and then I would say, who are you voting for? And that would be the end of my video. That assumes that I, you know, that would be a topic I'd cover, which I wouldn't. But what's your take on? And that would be a total of 1 minute video. What's your take on the probability of that being viral? If I were working for you,
if you were to do what we call an MOS, which is a man on the street, you know, where you go and you interview lay people and you ask them their opinion, like Jimmy Kimmel does, for example. He goes and asks these inane questions on his show, and you would ask a number of homeless people who they're voting for, I think that's a really interesting, potentially viral, you know, video that could catch fire.
Okay, so you didn't like my idea?
Well, I think it's been done. So the question is, you know, I think that there was a guy who worked at some big technology company and said some very disparaging remarks recently in San Francisco about this homeless person on the street, and these streets are so dirty, and how could they be there, you know, and that caught fire, you know? And so that caught fire, that went viral, you know, because it was so, you know, stereotypical, you know, class divide. You know?
All right, let me, we got to end this, but I always like to do this when we have a minute. Peter Himmler is a human being. He's not just a guy who's talking to me on the radio. You've spent, you know, a number of years in this PR game. You started traditionally. Now you're doing more of this, the modern social media-ish and digital stuff.
Yep.
But what is a question that Peter Himmler has in his mind about his own future?
Listen, I'm doing this a long time, and there are a lot of young people that are in this, and the challenge for me is to keep it fresh and to keep current. and it's out of fear of being a dinosaur, I suppose. And so I'm one of the few guys that I can go to South by Southwest, you know, and be an older person, but actually go toe-to-toe with some of these millennials and some of these founders. And I think that kind of wisdom is valuable today. So I just hope to just continue to stay current, and that's my challenge.
Yeah, nobody wants to be irrelevant. At any exactly. age, you want to feel you're still in the game. What else, other than going to South by Southwest, trying to be digitally, not a digital native, but a digital immigrant, what is one other thing that Peter Himmler is doing to try to stay relevant?
Well, I'm an avid person on Twitter, and I'm trying to figure out Snapchat. My boys all like it a lot, and I've been tooling around with a new site called Peach that was very hot for about 2 minutes, and so it's just looking at the communications tools and making sure that I'm sharing with my clients the latest thinking.
All right. Speaking of which, all right. So now I'm going to give you a little chance to give an honest, no BS plug for yourself. If there was a God, what kind of client would be wisest to come to Peter Himmler to pay good money for your PR skills?
Well, they're, a deep pocketed client or a very differentiated startup that has funding. Okay, I like those. But I have a couple of very big clients, and I keep those as linchpin, but I like startups. So I just signed on a virtual reality company run by a woman who's African-American, who's a rocket scientist. And I'm very excited to start work with her. And virtual reality is an AI and artificial, augmented reality is sort of where things are going right
yeah.
now. A lot of PR people. So that's kind of cool. I'm very excited about that.
So, okay, dear listeners, if you are starting some virtual reality or augmented reality business, you got the right guy. Peter Himmler, Flatiron Communications, thanks very much for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemco.
Marty, enjoy talking to you. Have a great day.
Be well. All right. So now we turn to you directly. Those are all abstract, but if you have a work problem of any sort, this is the time to call. Every week we do this. At the end of the show, then all the calls are lined up and people don't get on the air and they've waited on a long time. So this is the time to call. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, usually I can help. I do what's called a workover. I ask you questions to try to tease out what the real problem is and then come up with a practical solution, no BS. So phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco for a workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. While we're waiting for the calls to come in, certainly one of the most pervasive problems, and frankly I'm seeing it actually increase, is procrastination. And I had a recent session with a client, and I thought it might be useful to give you a window into what I actually did with that client. It doesn't have magic answers, nothing really. The older I get, the less I believe there are magic answers. But it did raise some possible issues that might be helpful for you in understanding your flavor of procrastination and some solutions. So I thought I would read this. I actually created a little transcript of this part of the session. It's taking me about 5 minutes, I'm thinking. I will read it to you, and then hopefully we'll go to the phones and answer your questions about your work-life problems. If you've got a work-life problem, 415-841-4134. I start by saying, so, it was the beginning of the session. I said, so, how'd you do with the to-do list? I'd given him a to-do list at the end of the previous session that he was supposed to do in preparation for the next career counseling session. The client says, not so well. I did call my best friend, but he said he didn't have any leads for me. So what else did you do? We had developed quite a comprehensive list of things you said you'd want to do. I know. Sometimes when people don't do their homework, it's simply because they were busy with exigencies. But other times it is procrastination, and I recall you're writing on your new client questionnaire that you are a serious procrastinator. Yeah. Well, procrastination is merely the symptom. It can be caused by many things. I'm going to mention five things, and you tell me which one or more of these you think causes your procrastinating, especially caused your procrastinating in your job search. Number one, you don't remember or are not sure how to implement the plan we developed. Two, and you can write these down. I'm telling the client, I'm also telling you, listeners, you can feel free to write these down just to think about them because it's hard to remember five things at one time. Two, you don't feel competent to get the target job we identified, so you're reluctant to try to land the job, let alone impose on your network. 3, you're embarrassed to tell people you're looking for a job. 4, you can't make yourself do unpleasant tasks, even if you know they're good for you. And 5, you're just alienated. You don't care about anything. I don't know if it's depression or you're just alienated. The client says, I know what to do. I listened to the MP3 of our last session. My problems are 2 and 4. I don't feel competent, and I too often choose a pleasant activity, even if an unpleasant one's better for me. I then say, okay, so regarding competence, should you choose an easier career, get more competent, or accept that you're competent enough for your target job? The client says, I should get more competent. I need to bring my programming skills up to date. I say, well, normally, the fastest way to build such competencies is self-study augmented by a tutor. That means you study on your own, and then you email questions to your tutor and maybe meet weekly, maybe in person, maybe by phone. Do you think that would work for you? The client says, I do. You think you'd procrastinate on that? To be honest, yes. Well, is there anything that could eliminate the possibility of your procrastinating it? Well, maybe having structured time every day that I had to do the work, and maybe having somebody standing over me with a gun to keep me at it. We both laugh, and then I said, except for the gun, is that something you'd like to try and implement? Yeah. All right. Well, what hours would you like to block out for job search, and who's going to be your loving taskmaster? Well, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon, and 2 to 4. My wife can be the taskmaster. Okay. Should you also try the Pomodoro technique, which is named after those tomato-shaped kitchen timers? You set the timer for 20 minutes. You work until the bell goes off, and then you get a 5-minute break. You work another 20 minutes and another 5-minute break, and another 20 minutes of work, and you get a 10-minute break. Do you think that would work for you? He says, I think so. I say, foundationally, you also have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. Otherwise, you're going to too often choose something more fun than job searching. It's also true when you get hired. You know, you don't want to get let go again for poor performance. The client then says, my father was always hedonistic, and so it's deeply ingrained in me. But I really would like to change. My procrastination's really hurt me. I then ask, I say, please, be honest with yourself and me. If we could bet on whether in the next week you would have put in a true 20 hours on your job search, should we bet on you or against you? He says, 50-50. I say, what could make the odds 95-5? He says, having my wife stand over me with the gun. I then say, I want you to keep a log of what you do at the moments of truth, when you're supposed to be starting working and when you reach a hard part. And write down whether you're procrastinating or getting it done. And also what you're thinking, what goes through your head at those moments of truth. And next session, if you're still procrastinating a lot, we'll use that to revise the game plan. How are you feeling? He says, cautiously optimistic. I said, you've been an inveterate procrastinator your entire life. Yes, sometimes my clients make almost instant progress, but many others require more time. Do try a zero-tolerance policy for procrastination. Taking the choice out of the matter can sometimes make it easier to stop procrastinating. If that doesn't work, use the approach they use at Alcoholics Anonymous, one day at a time, 2 steps forward, 1 step back, just keep putting 1 foot in front of the other. He says it makes sense. I then say, well, when a client says it makes sense, he often means, it makes sense, but I doubt if I can be that rational about it. He says, I think I can. I then say, I'm in your corner. If you hit a roadblock between now and next session, feel free to email me. We'll conquer your procrastination, or at least we'll keep it at a level that doesn't devastate your life. He says, thank you, I appreciate that. So that's what that was, a little edited excerpt from a recent, about a week ago's session with a procrastinating career client, a Clemson client. If you are a procrastinator, for any of those reasons, and I want to tick those off for again, if any of this resonates with you, you don't know quite what to do, and that's why you're procrastinating. 2, you don't feel competent enough to do. You feel like you're competent enough to complete the task. You're embarrassed to tell people that, for example, you're looking for a job. You can't make yourself do unpleasant tasks, even if you know they're good for you. And 5, which I've seen a lot, is you're just alienated. Somehow you feel nothing is worth it. You may or may not be clinically depressed, but you just feel like, so what? and you just can't motivate yourself. If you're a procrastinator for any of those or other reasons, I invite you to call. I will do my best to help. Again, no magic pills, but I can usually be helpful. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Okay, let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hi, it's you. Are you there? I guess you're not there. Let's go to the next line. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi.
Hi.
Marty, this is weird. I've been a radio person myself, an environmental reporter for many years. But here's my situation. I live in Oakland. My landlady is selling my house, and I've gone from just working for our small sign business, my partner and I, to having to look into possibly buying, and that would mean no longer working for the family business and going back to working full-time. I've been a legal secretary off and on for many years, where you can make at least $25 an hour, and according to my mortgage lender, I'd have to make $25 an hour, 35 hours a week to get into the market over here. My situation is that I have worked, sure, I don't know, like a year, year and a half, 2 years at a law firm. I haven't done it in a while. I would do this off and on. I've done it for many, many years. It was kind of my go-to place to make money when I had to. Mm-hmm. More recently, I've worked sort of on the financial side. I worked for a wine import-export business, got 4 days of training, and basically was the controller for the office for 3 months while someone was having surgery. Mm-hmm. I've worked for our CPA. I can do QuickBooks, you know, all the basic stuff, get the taxes ready for our accountant, things like that. I'm really good with numbers. The other thing, I graduated from Cal. I went back and graduated in 2002, Phi Beta Kappa, high distinction. Smart girl, did all the radio classes at the grad school of journalism, and as we know, I ended up volunteering a lot at one of your competitors, one of KLW's competitors.
Yep.
So I need a job right away, but I'm 56. I'm not as young as I used to be, and the interviews I've gotten, I feel as though age is an issue, sort of, and also maybe sometimes not being as devoted as I could have been to working long-term at a firm.
What do you think about the following? I'm trying to piece together all the different ingredients. I'm trying to picture an industry where there isn't age discrimination, which is going to be much more likely to be the government. I'm looking at your values, the fact that you're working for a KLW quote competitor. We here in leftist radio, we don't compete. We collaborate. So let's say it's KPFA or whatever. So because you live in Oakland, so I'm guessing it's KPFA, but it doesn't matter. And you care about the environment, and the highest level work you did was this. You informally became a controller. So you're smart, to use your own term, you're a smart girl. You now have a degree from Cal. I'm wondering whether you should try to pitch yourself to a government agency in some kind of an accounting role where they're going to pay more than $25 an hour, no benefits and whatever, and that'll get you some security. And, you know, not all, but most government workers do just work the 37.5-hour week, and then that's it, or 40, and then you've got time for your environmental activism or whatever, and to live a life, to recuperate a little bit from work, because you said you're 56 and you're not what you used to be. What do you like and not like about that vision?
I actually do like that. I've applied for a couple legal positions within government agencies, one for the city of San Francisco, and then there is I saw one for the Court of Appeals, but they wanted a recent college graduate. I see those words a lot.
I'm wondering whether I'm seeing the combination, though, of the financial background. A lot of legal secretaries can be word people and detail people, but you've got the number sense thing down, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm always trying to find that unique combination. So I'm wondering whether it's either within some agency that has both legal responsibility but also fiscal responsibility, where maybe your understanding enough of the law will just help you make smarter decisions around the financial stuff you got to do. I'm trying to to see if you can find an agency locally. Remember, Oakland has these two enormous federal buildings.
Yes.
You know, with thousands of people working at them. And then, of course, the city of Oakland is this mammoth bureaucracy as well. I'm wondering whether there's going to be some job either listed or where you can combine your legal and mathematical knowledge as well as a degree from Berkeley, which is not chopped liver, and either apply through the front door that is answering ads, or, because these agencies are often listed, see if you can get an informational interview with somebody there, maybe who somebody who is a little older and therefore will feel a little being a kindred spirit to you, whether that, you know, that way you can kind of get an inside lead on such a job. How do you feel about that?
I think it sounds great. I'm just wondering, instead of doing Craigslist, which seems to be...
No.
But how do I get to... How do I find that person?
Google City of Oakland, and okay, you're going to get to the government, the City of Oakland's website. The federal website is USA.jobs.gov or something like that. But just Google federal jobs, and that'll take you to a website. And then look for local, you know, you can search on zip code. So you can search on, you know, 94607 or whatever, and you're going to find jobs that are in the San Francisco Bay Area. And that's how you're going to get to the websites of the different agencies that are local. Then, very often, the web, because they are public agencies, they list some of the leaders, you know, or even sometimes everybody. So you can often get names of people right there on the website, including their website and phone number, their email address and phone number.
Call, email, both?
It depends on your personality. Since you're a radio person, I would say call followed up with an email.
Okay.
Sound good?
That sounds really great.
All right. Well, I'm glad you called Work with Marty Nemco. I wish you the best.
Thank you very much. I know.
Okay. So if you have a work-related problem, I do try to help with what things I call workovers. There's a couple of lines available. You won't have to wait too long, I don't think. So the phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, for a workover, 415. Oh, by the way, and I'm particularly interested again in procrastinators. And also, I've been doing a lot of thinking lately about people who are alienated, who are just too alienated to go and look for work, succeed at work, try hard. They're just kind of going through the motions of life. I'm particularly interested in those folks. So if that feels like you, that's another good reason to call. But any work-related problem is good. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hello, am I on the air?
You are.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about a suggestion you had in one of your previous programs. If someone is in my business, I'm thinking of writing an e-book.
Okay.
You said that it would be better to write some kind of extensive article instead of taking all the time to write an e-book.
Well, it depends on the length.
Elaborate on that suggestion?
I've seen e-books that are 25 pages long, and so then we're reaching in the gray area. I think full-length books are not worth doing in general. They're just too much work for the benefit. But something, you know, we are living, as I said in our conversation with that person on PR, we are living in a world where people have ever shorter attention spans. They want 30-second videos with about 20 different images in those 30 seconds. They want tweets. They want 100 to 300 to 500 maximum word articles. So I would rather see you post individual articles of 100 to 500 word lengths and use those rather than collecting them as a total ebook. I have written over 3,000 published articles, and the ones that have gotten the most interest. For 6 years, I was a columnist at the Chronicle, and my column was 100 words, and people like that better than anything. People are overwhelmed with content. It's what we call a data smog, information overload. So have respect for your audience's time, and make them in small, digestible bites. That's my best advice.
Okay, that was in that context. What about writing a column for a paper? A newspaper like the Mercury News to get at more of the high.
They're very hard to get. Columns are very much in demand. It certainly can't hurt if you've taken, for example, the content of your ebook, reduce them to 5 columns that are each 500 to 700 words, and it can't hurt to send it to the editor of those publications. But it's not so easy, and I'm not so sure these days that matters that much. I think that it would, you know, make the effort, certainly. But if you have to blog, I'm fine. But I like maybe the best thing that my guest said when he talked about PR is get it somewhere on the internet so you've got a URL for your article. And then send that URL to people who have a profound interest in what you do. Bloggers, tweeters, Snapchatters, Instagrammers, Pinteresters, you know, whatever it is. What kind of business do you run?
Well, I... I'm in the business of helping people to manage the multicultural workforce and helping foreign-born professionals to be more effective in the multicultural workforce.
Okay. So, of course, that is a topic that has been as well-trodden ground. What you're going to want to do is ask you, it's always the rule in writing, and I do this every day when I write, is I obsess about, is this fresh, is this new, and is this important? I would then say, okay, if there is something you have to say that's fresh and new and important, you write it as concisely and entertainingly without being silly as possible. And that's what, in my mind, you do. You take that, and then, yes, there is never in my lifetime been as much interest in diversity and diverse workforces as today. Never. And so your topic is absolutely timely. But I would send it, you know, not only to the biggies, but I would, you know, there, you know, would it be the Daily Cause is very interested in stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of liberal publications that are very interested in that stuff.
So yeah, I'm focusing more on the high tech industry.
Okay, then I would. There certainly are Silicon Valley publications. You know, whether it be the Business Times. The Silicon Valley Business Times, or publications specifically. I don't know the publications read by high-tech people, but there are every professional association, whether it be electrical engineers or software engineers or project managers or whatever, they all have their websites and publications. There's no reason, once you get that posted somewhere, even like the my guest said, even on medium.com that anybody can publish, you now have a URL to send to all of those entities in Silicon Valley that are interested in diversity, and frankly today everybody is.
Okay, very good. Yeah, we do have a website with an article posted.
Great. So I would send the links of those to every entity that might be interested in increasing diversity or better managing diversity in the Silicon Valley workplace.
Okay, very good. Thanks a lot, Marty.
You're very welcome. Okay. Well, now we have a lot of lines lined up, so I'm not going to give out the phone number. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah. Oh, you can hear me. Right. Great. Right, I'm somewhat different than the people I heard you talking about. I'm a scientist.
Okay, great.
Right, yeah, I ended up in Palo Alto. That's where I'm calling you from, to work for a startup, which didn't work out. And so I'm sitting here watching my money dwindle from an apartment here. And I'm looking for work. I have been looking for work almost for a year now. In the high-tech industry, albeit related to materials, things like that. I have virtually zero background with industry. I've been in academia most of the time. And I looked through your list, I wrote that down quickly, of 1 through 5, procrastination. Let's see, I'm stuck up on 1 a little bit, and 5, probably more so. Right now I'm looking into making a startup company, and that's pretty challenging to do.
Certainly is in the most competitive environment at all. So for those of the listeners who are just joining us, number 1 was you don't really know what plan to implement, and 5, you're just generally alienated. Let's try to understand. So you've been in the academic world in material science, right? Be more material science, of course, a huge field. Tell me a little more about the kind of materials and the kind of expertise you have.
Okay. I'm a chemist. Yep. Organic chemist. I was a faculty member in Alaska, of all places, at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, until they changed their focus and they changed their focus to other areas, and I lost my job.
Okay, be narrow for the moment. What is your narrow area of expertise?
Optical materials is what that's called, and that means developing photovoltaic materials, generating light at specific frequencies, which have industrial uses, semiconductor materials, things like that.
Okay, what if I said it's a mistake to go the invention route because there's too many things that can go wrong and it costs too much, the cost of development. But have you thought about either if you're starting a business or working for somebody in more at the test area, you know a lot about light. in light in materials and photovoltaic materials. Which companies are using those materials and need either quality control testing, you know, to make sure that there is sufficient consistency and quality, or a new they're evaluating new materials and you're in a good position to create testing paradigms. Does that resonate at all for you?
No, because that requires a certain skill set, which I don't have.
Good.
Organic chemists make things.
Okay.
They design new materials.
Okay.
They require wet laboratories. And what you are referring to, those are physicists or engineers or people like that.
Fair enough. So, but I'm nervous. Can you say your money is dwindling, and if you're living in Palo Alto or thereabouts, the rents are bizarre, and so
yeah.
I'm sure it's dwindling rapidly. You need a job. You can't start a business. I think it's going to just increase your rate of decline. The probability, the risk reward ratio is bad.
Yes.
So you have no industry experience, but where, if you were to trust the wise man within you, because you know your expertise or not, what is this very narrow, specific, is there a company or two that you think would be most likely to need your expertise, if only on a consulting basis?
Those are either A, large companies, or I have interviewed smaller companies. I've even walked into one and had to, this is Menlo Park.
Right.
I've even walked into the company and met the people with whom I would be working with. They said, gee, you've got so much experience. And I said to them, sure, I have experience, but it's not in your area.
Mm-hmm. What?
I was already anticipating that question.
Okay, here is my thought. I think two things. First of all, I don't believe a large company is going to hire you. Large companies
I don't think so either.
Yeah, they have the pick and choose of people, and that's not going to make sense. I would invite you, if this particular small company you walked in was it was kind of the right church, wrong pew. It was not quite right there. Your area. I think you need to do a more focused academic level. What I mean, rigorous level. Look for small companies where your particular expertise in light at various frequencies and photovoltaic is going to be right on the money. And then you need to, I'm grateful that you have the ability to walk in. Most people are too shy to walk in, but walking in can be very potent. I'd like you to do some rigorous research to identify 3, 5, 10 really small companies. There could be 3-people company, 5-people companies, 10, whatever, that where your expertise is on the money, and then either write to them, call to them, or even walk in. How does that feel as a refocusing, a lasering, if you will, to forgive the light metaphor, a lasering of your effort?
Well, I think that, there are a number of things I can say. I think starting at the most positive, walking in the door to one of these places, that takes some gumption, but I think that makes sense. Being on the other end of the spectrum, so to speak, emailing people, that's a black hole.
It tends to be. I like to do there is an old phrase in advertising that it takes multiple exposures to get a yes. So what I'm a big fan of is call, email, call. You call after hours, give your pitch. You then send an email that follows up on that immediately. Then you follow up a week later with a phone call, and that triple response. And the third response could even be walking in. It's in itself, it's not enough. It's like a car can't run with just a transmission. It needs an engine and a transmission. So I'm talking about multiple exposures to a few of those small companies. What's your reaction?
Oh, that would be cool. For example, the company which I mentioned before, where they gave me an interview, I was even willing to volunteer.
Right.
For them.
Good idea. Listen, I'm looking at the clock. My show is over, but I wanted to give you every last second. I hope that helps a little bit of lasering, focusing your laser, so to speak. I wish you the best.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yep. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. I'm really looking forward to next week's show. In addition to doing workovers, which I love doing, I'm talking with a guy who's considered the most evil job title of all, dog catcher. He's an animal control officer, but I spoke with this guy. They're very much not the way we think they are. You're going to like the show, I promise. Anyway, until next Sunday, the guy's name is Mike Holland. He does it in Marin. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.